Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. If you have the time, you can not only listen to the episodes, but you can also watch all the shows, and you'll find the links in the description below. Thank you. Welcome to Series 3 of the Tim Hill Podcast. The last two series have been all about me. In this new series, it's going to be all about other people. I'm going out to interview people to get their life stories. I think it's going to be a fascinating journey. Thank you for listening. Okay, so if you'd like to start.
So Tim, my name's Andy Fenner. I work for the Sea Cadets now, but before that I was in the Royal Navy. But if we go right back, I guess, to when I was born in 1965. In June of 1965, and my parents lived in the centre of London at that time. My dad was a young curate. He was a curate at All Souls in Langham Place, which is just by the BBC television centre. And for a couple of years, lived in a little flat above a youth club, which he was running as part of his ministry. I vaguely remember being taken for walks in the pram in Hyde Park, but I don't really remember much about London because when I was about three, he got a job as a vicar in Cambridge, so we moved to Cambridge, and you might think, lovely, leafy glades and colleges, all nice and posh. But we were in the sort of rough end of town, the workers' end of town, where the railway workers, when they laid the railway line, had all lived, so fairly close together, almost slum houses, back-to-back streets, shared archways through to gardens at the back. But we lived in a vicarage on the side of the church and had a not only our own garden, but a big church garden at the back of that, so lots of room to play outdoors. When we were younger, I had two more sisters and a brother, so there were four of us in all over the next 4 or 5 years, 6 years.
Does that make you the oldest?
So I'm the oldest of four, yeah. And my youngest sister's about 7 years younger than me. So we all went to the local infant schools. Funnily enough, I was back in Cambridge a couple of weekends ago, and I went for a little bit of a walk round to see some of the old haunts, and my infant school has gone and is now houses, and my first junior school has also gone and is now houses, so I'm not quite sure where everyone goes to school anymore. And most of my memories of my younger days were of sort of extended holidays down in Cornwall, because Dad ran a little Christian Beach mission, which he got sort of permission to be away from Cambridge for, so he did that for 2 weeks, services on the beach every day and activities in the afternoon. And then we tagged on our family holiday 2 weeks after that. So we spent a month of August in Cornwall for best part of 6, 7, 8 years, which has really stuck in my mind. One of the sort of happiest times of childhood was just playing on the beaches all day long, camping in tents on a farmer's field, and just relaxing. It was always sunny, and if it wasn't, there was always deck chairs that you could make a tent out of. So local schools up until the age of about 8 or 9, and then I got a tryout for quite a posh school, I suppose, a private school slightly further outside of Cambridge, and was lucky enough to get one of the last free places that the last Tory governments were giving out before Labour came in the late 70s, which paid for my schooling at this private school all the way through to 18. So I went to a pretty good, very sporty, a lot of drama, good teaching, high standards. I wasn't great, but I managed to get through it all, but thoroughly enjoyed myself there. So that was at the Purse School in Cambridge, and every other person in my year, or boys school, every other boy in my year were aiming at university entry when it came to sort of sixth form time, and I had enjoyed being in the cadet force, the naval section of the cadet force, all the way through school. Loved sailing, really enjoyed family holidays sailing in mirror dinghies, and I also was quite interested in electronics, sort of hobby electronics, soldering and kits in those days. So I was looking for something that would allow me to combine sailing and electronics, and managed to find a branch of the Royal Navy that was called Weapon Engineering, which is all about electronics and the stuff that interested me. So I applied and thankfully got in.
Did you come in as a rating, or did you come in as an officer?
No, I joined as an officer. I joined with the A-levels I needed to come in as an officer, and I then went and did an engineering degree with the Navy. While I was in the Navy, they had their own Naval Engineering College in those days. So I had thought about joining earlier, slightly younger as a rating, but was encouraged by both school and family to stay on, do my A-levels, and then try the interview process for officer. So I got on the train to Totnes, September 1983, with a load of other youngsters in ill-fitting suits and carrying raincoats and umbrellas, and got off the bus at Totnes and got to the Naval College and pretty much loved what I was doing then for the next 32 years. Trained as an electronic engineer, specialised in radios, radars, computers, sonars, missile systems, gunnery systems, that kind of thing, and served at sea in several ships for several deployments.
Brilliant. So what brought you then into retirement and the Sea Cadets?
Well, I wasn't really looking to retire, Tim. I turned 50. I'd done all the jobs I thought I could do at sea on a number of different ships, including the latest Type 45 destroyers firing the newest missile systems, hitting the target. You know, that was about as good a day at the office as it got. And I'd had a good spell in Fareham, in one of the naval bases there, running the day-to-day activities, and probably would have carried on doing headquarters jobs until I timed out. But a good friend of mine, who is currently the captain of the Sea Cadet Corps, phoned me while I was on leave, and I came back from leave to about 20 recorded messages and was going through really deleting them all, and just happened to listen to his because I know him. And he said the Sea Cadets were looking for someone to help them operate a fleet of ships. And would I be interested? And I did a bit of research and digging and found out that this fleet of ships just happens to be based in my hometown of Gosport, happens to be based in Fort Blockhouse, what was HMS Dolphin, which is right next door to my own sailing club, Hornet Services Sailing Club. And the ships were pretty special. The Royalist, which is the pirate-looking ship, twin-masted square rigger. Two 24-metre motor vessels and two were Tradewind 35 yachts based at Hornet, and they're now Rustler 42 yachts. So that sounded right up my street because I've always enjoyed teaching sailing. I like being out on the water. I could cycle to the job. And as a kid, as a sort of teenager, 15, 16, I had done a voyage on the Sir Winston Churchill, which was the Sail Training Association sailing ship at the time, and enjoyed climbing and going out in the yards and setting the sails and being at sea and peeling the spuds. And that's the kind of thing that we do with the young people. We give them a life-changing experience on the water. So a couple of interviews later, a bit of a nervous gap between the two, I was offered the job, and that was nearly 5 years ago.
And you're still doing the job?
And still doing the job, although been pretty tricky in the last year. Trying to get residential activities for youngsters has been a no-no during a pandemic, but we've even worked around that to find a way of taking them to sea for the day on the weekends and in the school holidays so that their education's not disrupted and they don't have to sleep on board. It's not quite the full package that we would want to deliver, but we hope that by the end of next year, with the vaccines prevailing, we might be in a position to do that. But certainly over the last 5 years, it's been a ball. 60 young people every week get a life-changing experience on the water from March to November. I've got 19 staff who deliver that, and I go out to sea and help them from time to time. So I take command of a warship, little mini motor vessel, or learn the ropes on the square rig ship, or skipper the yacht for them whenever the need arises.
So can you describe to me a bit more about Royalist? I noticed a few years ago they changed Royalist for a new one. Can you tell me, were you around at the time that that happened?
So I arrived beginning of 2016, and that was just as the new Royalist was sort of bedding down and settling in for her first full season. The original, we don't say the old, we say the original Royalist, was the first sail training vessel built for the UK for many, many, many years and had a successful career, but was beginning to show her age. So the Sea Cadets, or the Marine Society and Sea Cadets, which is their full name, launched a fairly big campaign to raise the £5 million necessary to have their own flagship, if you like, recreated, built in a modern style, similar traditional look, but built from steel, designed on computer, the hull form tested in a towing tank and the rig tested in a wind tunnel, all the things you couldn't do sort of 60 years ago. And the result is a beautiful vessel, which we really enjoy taking to sea. And When we do get a chance to race with our tall ships colleagues, we absolutely wipe the floor with them because of how well she's been built. So she's a very stable platform. It's pretty much downwind, offwind sailing. So for those people who like pulling the headsail in tight and beating to windward, that's not our game. You can't point to windward in a square rigger. So you have to be very clever about where you're going to sail, how you're going to use the wind. And tacking is a team effort. It takes all 24 young people to swing the yards round on the different masts in the right sequence to alter the point of effort such that the brig will tack or the opposite, wearing, which is what we call jibing. If you get it wrong, she hangs up in stays and sits there going backwards. So it's a little bit of a throwback to the 1700s when the Royal Navy was the Navy of Sail.
How long did it take to train a crew of 24 up to sail her effectively? So say you've got a tall ships race coming up, how would you go about getting the troops ready to do that?
So our normal program thing will be a 6-week voyage. So the young people would join on a Saturday midday, having travelled all from all around the UK, and they would leave the vessel the following Friday morning. So they would have basically 6 days to become a team. And there's a fairly intense training package on the Saturday and the Sunday. And then you'd normally go to sea on the Sunday for a couple of hours, just start gentle manoeuvres, come in each night, and then each day spend a little bit more time at sea and just get a little bit better. So by the Wednesday, Thursday, the cadets know what to do. They know what the orders mean, and they're beginning to understand how it makes the ship sail. For something like a tall ship's race, we would normally have a 2-week period with the young people. So we wouldn't pre-train them. We wouldn't train them in advance. We would get them on a Saturday, but they would stay with us for 2 weeks, and the race would be timed so that would be in the second week. And by the time they've got to that point, they know exactly what they're doing. They can do it well. They can stand watches. We can keep the vessel at sea then because we can make our own water and we can man the watches for the deck officers and the lookouts. And the cadets really enjoy that kind of thing because it's something they don't normally get to do.
Okay. And for 2021, have you got any races planned for us?
Sadly, no. We looked at, in fact, we would have gone, she was built in Spain, in La Coruña, and the tall ships races last year, which she was programmed for, would have taken her back down to Coruña and indeed further down the Iberian Peninsula to Cadiz. But of course, they were cancelled because of the pandemic. They're going to put them on again next year, but it's a little bit too late in the year for us to be sure of getting back across Biscay. And we feel we need to get the vessels around the UK so that sea cadets who have spent most of the year 2020 doing stuff on computer or virtually, you know, as best they can, they actually want to get on board and do the activities they love. So we're going to spend next year going around the UK, visiting various ports, possibly 2022. There's some tall ships races up towards Denmark, Edinburgh, and we might get involved in those.
OK, looking at the other two warship type vessels that you have, can you describe what goes on those, how many crew you get on a week, and what the program is for those?
Sure. So I think unusually we're probably the only provider of motor cruising training to young people in the country. There's quite a lot of sail training charities, but we have two motor training ships, Jack Petchy and John Jerwood, both named for philanthropers who had made it big in the city and wanted to give money back, so they paid most of the funds for those two vessels. They're 24 metres long, so they fit into the 24 metre workboat code, which eases our inspection regime. And each of them takes 12 cadets, has a crew of 6 adults. And again, they join on a Saturday and leave on a Friday. And apart from the fact that they roll like pigs in a beam sea, they're great. They're little, as I say, pocket battleships. You can helm the ship. You can do the lookout duties. You can be the steward. You can help with the peeling the potatoes. The engineer always wants people to help down in the engine room. So for a youngster who's perhaps interested in engineering, but it's all on screen or on a textbook, they can actually go and dip the oil. They can go and see what a vibration shock mount looks like. They can go and dip their dip the tanks every day.
Brilliant. And what's the bridge like? What's the...
It's not huge. We still use full-size Admiralty paper charts. We're just in the process of modernising so that we don't have to carry corrected paper charts. We're getting a charting system fitted, which is a downgraded version of what a big commercial ship would have. It's not a full ECDIS system. It's a one that's licensed for sort of the fishing sector. And once we've got that fitted, we'll keep the charts for the cadets to learn on, but we won't have the 2 or 3 hours a week overhead of trying to diligently correct paper charts. So there's a chart table, full-size chart table at the back of the bridge, all of the navigation kit you'd expect, a couple of throttles at the front with the gauges for the engineer to stand, a wheel in the middle, and the cadets steer the ship. They do it under our instructions, under our conning instructions, but they are the ones steering the vessel. And then there's the officer watch or captain's position with a pretty good view and some radar screens to support them. A lookout either side who can report things to us if they want to or not if they don't. That's how they learn. Normally they tell us something that has passed us as opposed to something that might hit us. But it's all part of learning, learning the ropes, I suppose.
And do you find that the cadets that come onto the motor vessels, they want to become into the Royal Navy?
We get a mix. We get a mix on all types of vessels. We tend to get the younger cadets. So from 12, they can come on the motor vessels. Have to be 13 and a half to be on the sailing vessels. And some of them are not really thinking about a career. We get some who are 16, 17, know that they're finished in education and want to get onto a career. And we've got a pretty good track record of getting them the advice they need, either for the Merchant Navy, getting them into a Merchant Navy college, into a shipping line, or into the Fleet Auxiliary, or into the Royal Navy or Royal Marines themselves. So we get quite a few a year who know that that's what they want to do, and we'll do everything we can to help them.
Fantastic. And what about the two Rustler 42? You've recently upgraded those from the old...
Tradewinds. Yeah, when I joined, we had the two Tradewind yachts, Vigilant and City Liveryman, which are beautiful, you know, good ocean goers. Some of them went round the globe in the recent recreation of an old race. But internally, accommodation-wise, you had the adults effectively sleeping in bunk beds in what was the children's toilet area. So if the kids wanted to have a wee in the night, they would be in the adult's bedroom. So from a child protection point of view, safeguarding, it wasn't really suitable. So again, fundraising campaign was launched. And this is in my time. We managed to secure the funding, firstly from the Lord Mayor of the City of London, so the centre bit where all the banks are, thankfully. So the first of our Rustler 42s is called Training Ship City of London. And the second one, we were not doing so well on the fundraising. And one of our trustees went to see Stelios Hagiani, Sir Stelios Hagiani, who had set up EasyJet, and asked him whether he might make a donation. So the second yacht is called Sir Stelios. He turns out to be a keen yachtsman himself. Rustler Yachts down in Falmouth build beautiful yachts for retired businessmen to impress their families. And they really bought into the idea of converting one of their designs for us, fitting it out with bunks for young people, carving out a second cabin for the mate, the adult mate, in the back, which was normally a lazarette. And that's given us a nice, bright, fresh, spacious, fast, safe, eye-catching pair of yachts, which operate around the UK, 6 cadets on each vessel, 2 adults on each vessel. And last year, when we were fully operating, 2019, they got as far as the Outer Hebrides, which I know you've been past, Tim, and it's a long way to go in a boat.
It is a long way to go in a boat, and the weather isn't always kind to you up in
indeed,
that part of the world.
Indeed, you've got to pick your windows.
As we found out this year.
And I skipper those yachts. I've had an absolute ball in them, been into Fingal's Cove, down to the Channel Islands. They're just great yachts, and we have them in some fairly eye-catching livery. I appreciate that on a podcast you can't really see the livery, but if you ever see them, you won't miss them. One's yellow and green, and one's light blue and dark blue with a sort of Sea Cadet branded colours on the sides of the hull.
And what are the sails on them?
So they are cutters. So they've got a staysail just aft of the jib. So they have 2 headsails. A Yankee, so it's cut very high, so it's not called a jib or genoa, it's a very high cut sail. We have a furling Yankee, then a staysail, which is a standard hanked on sail, and then a Bermudan main after that. So that gives enough winch work back off so that the 6 cadets have always got something to do, because she'll also have running backstays to support the mast where the staysail's attached. So if you're in a wind and you've got the backstays rigged as well, you're working at least 6 winches back aft each time you tack or jibe.
Fantastic. Is there anything that you'd like to incorporate in the future for your fleet of vessels?
We're always looking for new ideas that we can adopt.
We're branching out into meteorology. The vessels are fully fledged weather observation stations, so they take seawater temperatures, dew points, pressures, feed them back to the Met Office, who use them in their forecasts. And I'd also like to get some of the youngsters into learning to do coding and programming computers, because there's a lot of that these days that's very easy to access with a Raspberry Pi or a little single board computer.
How do cadets go about getting a place to come down onto the ships?
Yeah, good question. So we've got, we publish a poster each year which goes out to the 400 Sea Cadet units around the country. And funnily enough, we're about to publish a poster for 2022 because we like to get bookings in almost a year ahead. So we're assuming we'll be able to go ahead with residentials in 2022, and we're about to put the programme out. So they have a chat with their unit staff, look at a week that might work for them. Can be a school holiday week, in which case it's pretty straightforward. If it's a school week, then they're going to need to get permission from their school as well as from their parents. And to do that, they probably need to have some kind of educational bargain with the school that if they do well in their exams, the school will be happy for them to take that week. We see it as a good thing, education outside the classroom. Most schools buy into that. But there are some years, obviously the options years, the GCSE years, where we tend not to see many cadets released during the sort of exam season. But the younger ones, or maybe the year 12 ones, can take advantage of that period.
Is it just sort of the normal state type schools that you take, or do you take CCF schools as well?
It's quite a mix. It's always good to get a mix of backgrounds, types, regional backgrounds and areas and locations on each voyage. And they very quickly realise that actually, although they might think they're different, they're all pretty similar. And I've had voyages with youngsters from inner city schools combined with, you know, choristers from private schools. And by the middle of the week, they're all playing, you know, as fast as you can on the cabin table. We don't do as much, sadly, with the CCF as I would like to. I'm from the CCF background myself. Funnily enough, we do a fortnight's voyage on Royalists with the ATC, with the Air Cadets. We've always done that. They pick their best 24 to send us. And we have a good time with them. We also do an exchange where we take 12 Canadian Sea Cadets on a voyage with 12 British Sea Cadets. And they have a good chance to learn about each other's culture.
And is there any other criteria that the cadets need to be able to come down? And how's the selection done? Are you oversubscribed?
We are. We've always got backups. As I say, there's 24 places on Royalist, 12 on each power vessel and 12 on the yacht. So 60 spots a week. And a youngster can, with their parents' consent, book on in a provisional sense. Once they've made the payments and got the school consent forms, then they'll be confirmed. If they break a leg a week before, unfortunately, they can't come with us, but we will always try and get them onto another voyage. And if they can't, if they've got genuine hardship, and we'd normally know via the unit if there was a case of financial hardship, then there's some bursary support that some of our charity colleagues can give them to offset the costs.
And talking of costs, what are the rough costs for, say, 2 weeks coming down, or a week coming down for Royalist, or a week coming down for one of the warships, and a cost for the sailing vessel?
So we make a standard cost, a standard charge, which the charity itself significantly supports, because we, in fact, in the last year, we were asking the cadets to pay £340 for a 1 week voyage, and that includes travel from anywhere in the UK to join the vessel, and travel from anywhere in the UK to go home when leaving the vessel. It includes their food and obviously all the mooring fees, the fuel, the cost of running the vessel and the paying of the staff. So no way in the world I could do that for £340. So it costs me a lot more to run the vessels, but the Marine Society and Sea Cadets believes that this is a good investment to make, to provide that life-changing experience for that young person. So it's a reasonable ask, and the bursary support will probably allow them to maybe contribute £75 themselves and have bursary support for the rest of it. But to get that £75 as a teenager, you've probably got to go out and pack a few bags, do a few paper rounds, help out in a few shops. So they don't get anything for free, but we try and make sure they all get a chance to get on the vessels.
And a final question. How much does it roughly cost to operate the whole enterprise for a year?
My budget, and hopefully I'm not telling too many secrets here, my budget for the year is approximately £1.5 million to run for a full season. And if everybody paid their £340, I would probably take in £500,000. So the Marine Society and Sea Cadets is paying £1 million a year to operate our vessels. And I'm very glad they do.
It certainly seems like a really good enterprise.
Yeah, we've seen some fantastic results for young people, and that's really why we do it.
Brilliant. Thanks, Andy. That was fascinating. That is pretty awesome what you do. Looking after 5 ships for 60 young people every week. That is pretty, pretty tough going. I'm impressed. I mean, you've got TS Royalist, which is a square rigger, which gives 24 young people every week the chance to climb the rigging, to feel like what it was like to be at sea in the 18th and 19th century as sailors. That's pretty cool. And then you've got the 2 pocket battleships that take people out every week. So I guess that's another 24, 12 on each. And it feels like that they're on a proper Royal Naval patrol vessel. And then you've got the 2 sailing yachts. I mean, the Rustler 42 is a world-renowned yacht. And for these young people to have the opportunity to sail on such fantastic ships is brilliant. So if you've enjoyed listening to this and you feel that you've got a few quid in your pocket to donate, I'm sure the charity will be overwhelmed to receive anything that you could give. If you would like to donate, their website is Marine Society and Sea Cadets. If you do a search for that, it comes up with a page, gives you all the information about what they are, what they do, where they've come from. And there's a link there to make a donation. Next time, I'm going to have somebody equally as interesting. So thank you for listening. Welcome to the Tim Hill Podcast. If you have the time, you can not only listen to the episodes, but you can also watch all the shows, and you'll find the links in the description below. Thank you.